You sure?
Yes.
Everybody ready?
Good. Okay.
Okay, it is 6:01 p.m. on Tuesday, January 13th, 2026. We will call the Common Council meeting to order. Let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Varga.
Here.
Romano.
Here.
Weigel.
Here.
Bachman.
Here.
Adamson.
Present.
In front of you are the minutes from our last meeting on December 30th. Were there any changes or corrections?
There needs to be another L in Russell Gilliam.
Okay. Did you catch that? Russell Gilliam should have two L's on his first name.
Okay.
Any other changes or corrections? Okay. Do I have a motion to approve with the noted change?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, seconded by Chad. Further discussion. All those in favor show by the usual sign. Excuse me. It is unanimous. Sorry about that. Okay, next up we'll open up the floor for nominations for the council president's position. Do you have any nominations for council president?
I would like to nominate Dan Weigold.
I second.
I have a motion and second for Dan. Is there any other nominations on the floor? Do I have a motion to close nominations?
I move to close nominations.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor of Dan retaining the title of council president, raise your hand, please. Can you say? I'm going to turn over that. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Turn over Christmas Lighting Awards to Jennifer.
All right. I'll go around here so everybody can hear and it can be recorded. Basically, I want to thank the community for participating in our annual Columbia City Municipal Lighting Awards contest. Most of you might have entered and didn't even know that you were entered, and probably when you saw a sign in your yard, you didn't know that you got more than just a sign in your yard. You also get some prizes. So I'd like to name the winners for this year. The Northeast, some of them are not here, so Northeast District winner was Erica Smallwood at 134 Hilltop Drive. Also, when I name your name, just go ahead and come up here and stand, and we're going to get a picture. The Northwest District winner was Luz Fuentes at 524 North Elm Street. The Southeast winner is Jeff Michael at 809 East Business 30. The Southwest District winner is Amanda Pratt at 702 South Line Street. Not here. Okay, and then the overall winner is Kathy and Tony Johnson at 1422 Glenwood Drive.
Leslie's going to get a picture of them. We really appreciate it, and look forward to seeing what you have cooking up for next year.
Okay.
Thank you. Can
we look the time back, by the way?
Yes, that's great. Thank you so much. Okay, next up is the second reading of Ordinance 2025-27. Do I have a motion to read by title only?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Jennifer, second by Dan. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read Ordinance 2025-27 by title only.
Ordinance number 2025-27, vacation of public way.
And this is for the Ballards who are in the audience. We talked about this last time. Pretty in-depth, but if you have any questions regarding the vacation of that triangle parcel, if you will, open the floor for that. Okay, hearing none, can I have a motion to approve ordinance 2025-27 on second and final reading.
Motion.
Motion by Ryan.
Second.
Seconded by Jennifer. Further discussion. All those in favor show by the usual sign. And those opposed? Okay, so Ryan, Tad, Jennifer, and Dan approve. Opposes. So, thank you. Okay, we're going to move some things around here. So I'm going to move ordinance 2026-1 up in the line, just so you're aware for your calendars, if you will. So Nathan, that's you. Do you want to go ahead and come on up and talk about what's in front of us here? I will note that this is the zoning map amendment for 875 North State Road 109. Nathan.
Sure. Nathan Belger, planning director, for everybody's record. So this is a request for rezoning from R1 to GB for Hodges. It's filed by Thor and Landon Hodges, but for the Hodges Landscaping Property Management property. Portion of it overall is just over 11 acres. A portion of it is already zoned GB. That dates back from the 1990s. What this would do is rezone the rest of the property that has been added on to that over the years. The Hodges recently bought some extra acreage. That kind of triggered the need for rezoning the entire thing. This was at the Plan Commission for their public hearing last week. Received a favorable recommendation, a unanimous favorable recommendation to come to you. It was an 8-0 vote with one absence. I'll let the petitioner speak a little bit more about the nature of the business. If you want to know more, they are here. We did have some remonstrance as well. If you have questions about that, I think they're in the audience as well. But that's just the high-level summary of this. Any questions?
Questions of Nathan. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Landon, you want to come up? Is that what you're wanting to do? And Thor, I guess?
What we're looking to do,
an address, please.
Thor Hodges, 875 North State Road 109, Columbia City, Indiana.
Landon Hodges, 875 North State Road 109, Columbia City, Indiana.
Thank you.
So what we're doing here is just expanding the area that we have to grow our business. When we bought the land originally, it was for a landscape company, and we've started to diversify a little bit more, add some things to it. We were able to buy some land behind us. Our property has been split zoned. Not quite sure, like I said, like Nathan said, it was quite some time ago why it was split zoned, but it had been at some point. With the growth and what we want to do, we're still able to put up the greenhouse that we're putting up now the way it was zoned. We would like to put up an operations barn, and that's what's requiring the rezoning. It just makes sense, I think, in my not only listening to Nathan's staff report, but looking at what the comprehensive plan was, how it was designed, the overlay that was given. It was a great presentation at the meeting, just to show that land was, you know, originally designed and put into that comprehensive plan for that GB growth. So that's all we're asking for, that the entire property that we have is rezoned to GB. Also in the same project, I guess I would say, is that, you know, we are in a kind of a valley right there where traffic comes over that hill, and a lot of times people turning into our trucks, turning into our property, are stopped at the bottom of that hill for northbound or for southbound traffic. This land actually wraps all the way around the neighbor to the south of us and comes back out to give us more frontage on State Road 109, which is, of course, part of what we're asking to be rezoned to, that we can turn that into a second egress for us that has a line of sight up and down 109. That's going to make things a lot safer for us and for people that come to our business to be able to see and to turn and to be seen, sitting there waiting to turn. So we're real excited about that. We have had conversations already with the special project manager with NDOT, and that's in motion as far as the or what we need to do to make sure that there's already a curb cut there to make sure that we do everything that they would require to have that driveway access. As our business grows, I think that it'll be important that we can, you know, it's going to be a little bit safer. And that's essentially what we're asking for. I don't think it's a reach. It's not spot zoning. It's within, we're asking within the parameters of what it was originally set up for, and it's actually connecting two areas now that are zoned one GB and the other one GB. This is just going to be a bridge in between a couple of properties that are already zoned that way.
Questions from the council?
So, hey Thor, so you were going to put just a single building in that, I guess, the larger area of the property, or that, oh, I guess it's two different plots there.
We have not got to the point, or I don't know when we will, to have it replatted due to convenience of not needing to replat it. I don't know that we will.
Okay.
But if you look at the old split on the replat is about where, and I can point it out to you if you'd like.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it'll be right on the border where that,
where those two plats were, are where those are separate plats at.
Okay.
Ideally, are you hoping to have those greenhouses up and running, like, in time for spring? Or?
Well, I mean, we're way behind the power curve right now as far as having things ordered for it to put in it. But we're hoping that we can do a lot of maybe plug raising yet this year to have some things available. But again, to have the public have access to the greenhouse where we're building it, we would need to have that GB zoning. We can still have the greenhouse there under the zoning that it's currently at, and that's the reason that we got our permit and we've already started to put that up. We're not trying to get, you know, the cart in front of the horse here. We could still use it as land is zoned, but we just couldn't use it to its full potential of what we hope to do.
Mm-hmm. When you say potential, like retail, like for people to come in?
Yep, retail sales, you know, all kind of variety of plants, vegetables, and of course flowers that we're going to have in there are available. So a lot of it will still come down to the storefront. But this gives us the flexibility of, you know, if somebody wants to go back or if we want to make that into a place up there where people can come up and look at what we got and not be moving everything, then that makes the GB zoning makes that possible.
I apologize, Laura, would you, because this, I think this is another key piece to it, would you go into the barriers that you're going to put for neighbors?
Yes, and that was part of the land agreement purchase when we bought the new land. Is that our neighbors to the west, of course, we've got a natural barrier along the north side of it with a tree line, and there's a ditch there, but the tree line is a pretty good barrier, maybe not so much this time of the year, but it's still a pretty good thickness there. But to the west and the neighbors that we bought the additional property off of, we had several meetings with them to share with them what we were going to do, where we were going to put a greenhouse, where we were going to build the barn. And our agreement with them is, too, that we're building a, I call it a beauty mound. He corrects me and calls it a dirt mound. Privacy mound. We're going to build it. It's probably going to be 10 to 12 feet high-ish. And then we're going to plant arborvitaes or green giants along the top of that to give them the barrier that they will have there. Now, to the south, that tree line that's there, even with the new development, I think is going to continue to be there, I would hope. I think most of that tree line to the south is on the property still owned by the people that we bought property off of that probably wouldn't be, but maybe taken down when that property is developed. So that would be a border there. The only other real close neighbor in proximity to us then is kind of like the 2 acres that Craig Asplund owns in that little postage stamp that we wrap around now. And we've got a pretty good relationship with him and try to do things that aren't intrusive to what his plans are. I do know that he has recently purchased a new property too, and I think he's going to be moving. So, but his property is zoned GB as it is right now too.
What's your timeline for the drive? The new drive. I'm assuming it's going to be right across from Cambridge Crossing there.
It's going to be somewhat across from it. And when I talked with can't think of his name right now with NDOT. That's one of the things he suggested, that we try to get it as close to coming across from Longfellow as we could. And I told him that the only real obstacle that we have to that is the fact that the neighbor that we bought property off of had to maintain that 50-foot strip.
Yep.
And that 50-foot strip is going to come right up to that, too. So he looked at where that curb cut, that apron, is already, and he didn't think, especially with the widened or that turning lane, or not a turning lane, but the additional lane width there would help with a lot of that. Now, our plan is, they told me at NDOT that they thought that it would be a maximum of 45 days for them to do everything that they needed to for us to put in the drive.
Gotcha.
So as you know, there's some challenges there because there's a ravine that we have to put a tile in, and then, of course, we're going to have to build that up. So we'll probably start working on that as soon as the weather breaks or as soon as we get time to do that. So I think it's going to be it's going to be as soon as we can get NDOT to approve it,
okay,
and then we can get it done. Landon's going to do the work on it. Yeah. So
midsummer is, or...
I would hope early summer.
Okay.
Early summer.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Mr. Renninger, come on up.
Good evening. My name is Isaac Renninger, and I live at 1001 North State Road 109. Which is just north of the subject property. I previously submitted written objections and exhibits regarding this petition, and I won't repeat them here unless asked. I respectfully ask the council to evaluate this petition based on the city's currently adopted comprehensive plan and future land use map, because that is the only land use policy that is officially published and reasonably relied upon by both residents and businesses. At the Planning Commission hearing, it was stated that a future revision of the future land use map should be updated in response to the Commission's decision on this petition. I want to respectfully emphasize that rezoning should be evaluated against the adopted plan as it exists today, not used to shape future plan revisions retroactively. Until a formal amendment is proposed and adopted through the public process, the current future land use map is the policy the public and private sectors are entitled to rely upon. For the record, my objection is to any commercial expansion beyond what the future land use map intends. Thank you.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Anybody else wishing to speak on the ordinance? Okay. Hearing none, conversation among the council on ordinance. We haven't adopted one, I guess. You want to read it first, and then we can talk about it? Okay. So I have a motion to read Ordinance 2026-01 by title only.
So moved.
Okay. Motion by Jennifer, second by Brent. Sorry, Brent. All those in favor should be the usual sign. It is unanimous. Please read Ordinance 2026-01 by title only.
Ordinance 2026-01, an ordinance amending the zoning classification of certain property from the R1 single-family residential district to the GB general business district.
Conversation by the council on the ordinance and the rezoning request.
I'll just add that we had a lengthy discussion at Plan Commission about this situation, and out of respect for Mr. Renninger, I understand, and he did a very professional approach to us. Respect that a lot, but at the same time, we look at the business growing. We look at the surrounding area. We did look at the comprehensive plan, But at the same time, in my opinion, a plan is a plan. Plans can change. And in a situation where a business is trying to grow, and I'm very pro housing, very pro business, and this is just an area that it's going to happen. And if we can help a business grow and be productive in the situation that their business is, it's not going to create a lot of noise. They put in the proper restrictions, but things in to kind of hide their business from exposure to the neighbors. In just my opinion, I thought they were doing a great job of making their presentation as well. And so, that's why I believe we gave a unanimous decision to the commission meeting, because everything was done in line. Mr. Renninger believes that we're breaking the comprehensive plan lines, so to speak, but it's right on the edge. And in just my opinion, plans, it's about like when you have a big job ahead and you have a change order. So in my opinion, this is a kind of a change order to make something happen that produces expansion of an existing business. That's just my way of looking at it. But I was very supportive of what the Hodges are trying to do with their business. I think they're going to be very successful with it. And so I respect Mr. Renninger's opinion. But I'm looking at business expansion, which means probably more people hired, which means more productive areas for that ground. That's just me.
I'd like to, back up what you said there. You did a great presentation. It was very professional and well done. But I do feel like the opportunity to be able to shop for the services and products that will be provided at Hodges is something that would be really good for our community, to be able to get plants and landscaping needs for your property without having to go outside of our community would be really nice, especially that it's locally owned. That's really important. So.
Other questions?
I agree. And then because of where it is sandwiched in between the GB, the places that are already marked on that, I think it's kind of a natural progression in that area. And like Dan said, you know, there's some flexibility with the plan. So I appreciate, what you presented. But we do have to look at the entire community as a whole, as we, whether big business and residential, and make sure the two together.
Any other comments?
No, I appreciate you coming in, and I agree with the others up here. I look at that plan as a fluid document. Fluid documents change, right? I think it's naive to take a document, in my own opinion, like that, and it can't be in concrete because circumstances change. So although for me personally, it's a guideline, I don't look at it as, well, I mean, we can break it. You can't break something that is fluid, right? It's subject to change all the time. So I appreciate you coming in, but for me, I've got a soft spot for small businesses. That's what makes the world go around. So locally owned, I'm in favor.
Any other comments? Okay, then I will.
I'll make a motion to approve it.
Okay, I have a motion by Ryan. Okay. And seconded by Brent to approve Ordinance 2026-01 on first reading. Any further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. We'll move it to second reading at the next meeting. Thank you both. Appreciate it. Okay. Next up is Utility Rate Commission and Baker Tilly presentation on utility rates. So Baker Tilly, come on up. And we all have the packet in our Dropbox, so everybody should have access to it. However, if you'd like to put it up, so that's okay. So we can, obviously, we can post it and all that kind of stuff later.
Perfect. And we do have copies if anybody.
I don't know if anybody over there wants copies, but you guys can choose.
Nope, don't want the 40 pages. All right, thanks. Perfect.
Okay, so we will load that up here. It starts on page 16 of your packet. Okay.
Perfect.
All good, Mayor?
Have at it.
Perfect. All right. And I will, so good evening, Council. I'm Ian Stahl with Baker Tilly, manager at Baker Tilly. A staff consultant that has he's been in the weeds of the project, so he is here with me presenting Brent Duncan. So with this rate plan, I'll stick to kind of the summary we have together. So in the rate plan packet that I have in front of me, and you should have in front of you, it's pages 1 to 3 to kind of provide a summary. I can go through all 40 pages as much as you'd like, but I will save you a little bit of time and give you the summary of kind of everything that went into this. So we've been working for over 6 months now in developing this plan and looking holistically at all four of the utilities, as well as working with utility management and understanding the capital needs, the operating costs of running the utilities, because certainly two of our biggest costs of operating utilities are OPEX and your capital improvements, which are infrastructure needs are always out there and never slowing down, unfortunately, as we've seen in the utility environment. So taking all of that into effect, we've been working very closely with Leslie and Mayor in developing a rate plan that is going to hopefully minimize rate shock as well as gradually improve utility balances to get in compliance with minimum required reserves as part of bond covenants and things along those lines. So starting out on page one here, just want to start in on the summary of key changes. So ultimately here with this rate plan, what we looked at is how do we create a sustainable approach to our utility rates while minimizing rate shock. So really looking out for kind of those residential, commercial, industrial bills and making those impacts as meaningful but as least amount of impact as possible while still operating our utilities. So with that, we devised a plan from beginning in 2026 through 28, so a three-phase in approach similar to what we had looked at back in 2022. And what that three-phase approach between all the utilities, we are looking at about a 3.51% average annual increase per year. So kind of that, looking at that impact and what that meant in terms of dollars is about $10 per month per year, to be clear. So that's about $120 in total for the average residential user of an increase in 26, same increase in 27 and 28. That equates to that 3.51%.
And that's for entirety of the year?
That's correct, entirety of the year. So on a monthly basis, that is about $10 for the average user. And when I say average user, I'll break that down. It's using state standard, that's about, we're talking water, sewer, that's 4,000 gallons of usage in a 5/8 inch meter, so that typical meter size for a resident. And on electric, we're looking at 1,000 kilowatt hours of usage. So that is what is comprised of that average bill that I'm discussing there. Within this rate plan, I did mention capital expenditures, which are certainly a huge part of our utilities. And in Indiana, we're seeing, and I'm sure you're all well aware, a lot of aged infrastructure. And there's a lot of need out there. There's a lot of plants and infrastructure that are coming to their useful lives or extended and kind of Band-Aid as much as they can be to mitigate rate increases. So within this plan, we took a comprehensive look at that. And what this entire plan looked at for the four utilities was about $13.6 million of capital needs that this increase will fund. So in your packets, you can see there's a breakout by utility. Some are weighted more than others because sewer costs are a little bit higher. We have about $7.5 million over the five-year period. So we looked at a five-year capital plan, but built into a three-year rate plan. Of about $7.5 million of sewage works, capital improvements, $2.6 million of the water utility capital improvements, roughly a million of stormwater capital improvements, as well as about $2.5 million of electric utility capital improvements. So that was all built into this three-phase rate approach, that 3.51% per year. Moving down on the page here into primary drivers of those rate adjustments, again, as I mentioned, capital is a big piece of that we just mentioned, but with this rate plan, we still are assuming, and I know it's a hot topic right now with SEA1 going around, we're still assuming pilot payments are being made, so supporting the city funds as much as we can as a utility and paying those payments, what that stands for, payment in lieu of taxes, to put it in the longer form. So supporting the city in that measure of things, as well as still able to pay our debt service, our required debt service that we have through the sewage works bonds and the water works bonds, and stormwater does pay a portion of those too, so certainly helping out in that aspect, as well as continuing to pay for operating costs. So arguably our largest cost every single year, paying for salaries and wages, repairs and maintenance, chemicals at the sewage works facility, things along those lines, all built into this comprehensive rate plan. So again, and part of this rate plan, as I mentioned earlier on, was making sure we're building up in a sustainable way to meet minimum required reserves and work towards recommended reserves. So when I say required reserves for each of the utilities, what that means is making sure the required reserves are 2 months of budgeted operation and maintenance costs in our fund balances, making sure our bond and interest account and debt service reserve account are funded, and that's what we call required reserves because they're mandated by your bond covenants. When we look at recommended reserves, we add on top of that your capital improvement fund, but our typical recommendation in industry practice is about 1 year's worth of capital. So bringing that into kind of a nice summary, what that means for these utilities is we were falling essentially below our required reserves as of the end of 12/31/25 estimated and as of the end of 12/31/24. So what this plan will do is it took a look at that and said, what do we need to do to essentially work our way up to being into those required reserve balances? So by the end of 2028 in this three-phase approach, we will be meeting required reserve balances in all our utilities. And electric was already above all of those reserves, but in each of the other utilities, we found ourselves below those required reserves. So within this plan, we will continuously work up to be in that good standing and meet our bond covenants and be in required reserve and then continue to work up to recommended reserves down the road. So moving forward from that onto page 2, I want to give some insight to kind of what this looks like. I think it's a good visual in terms of a dollar perspective for those average users. So on page 2 at the top, as you can see there, we do show, you can see in the far right, the net change and then the percentage increase, which I mentioned is around $10 and a 3.51% increase over the course of the 3 years. So total bill, again, as you can see in the total bill column, increasing about $10 per month for all of the utilities through that three-phased increase. Below in the next chart, a quick comparison or a bar graph of what that looks like on a utility basis cost. So in the gray, you would see your electric utility bill where it's currently at about $1.45, $34.50 for water roughly, $10 for stormwater, and $75 for your current sewer bill. And what we've shown is just where that uptick would be, again, totaling out to your total utility bill per month of increases. Further, and a lot of colors on these graphs, so a lot of things going on, but on page 3, again here, just to give some perspective as to where you would stack up against other communities, we've pulled together two different graphs. The top graph is showing your sewer, stormwater, and water bills compared to other communities around here and the state average. We exclude electric just because a lot of communities don't have their own electric utility, so it's a little bit more of a apples to oranges comparison, and you'll see that on the further graph. But you can see here we have built in, it's about three-fourths of the way through where we're anticipating in 2026 the utility to get to, which is about $128.04 for those three utilities compared to some of your other neighboring communities. And I will say I think this graph is great, but it's certainly a moving target. So you can probably name a number of these communities that are currently working through long-term rate plans, things along those lines. So that's not to say we end up here and things of other communities and rate increases go into effect and we're not shifting back down towards the bottom part of the scale. So happens quite often, just the timing of where projects end up. And I know we're working with numerous communities and doing new treatment plants and things along those lines where we're seeing 50 to 100% rate increases. It's just really depending on where each community are at. So I want to advise that it's certainly a moving target, but things tend to right size as you move down the line and do projects and rate increases. So looking at the bottom part of this graph, we do have an electric bill comparison. that maybe paints a little bit of a different picture here. We're about halfway through the chart here. We're in 2026, we end up about $147, so about a little bit past that halfway point compared to some of the other smaller communities that do own their electric utilities. But again, the state average based on 2025 is certainly below that in terms of the electric utility. And as you've probably seen with a lot of the for-profit electric utilities, there has been quite a lot of increases per se that have been occurring, and then having your own utility for the electric utility has certainly helped with some of those rate mitigating factors and overall bills on a monthly standpoint. So I'll stop talking there
Can
for
I
a second.
Yes. One thing to point out, just because I have RMC where I'm at, the city is $20 less than RMC. So some of us folks that live in city limits may not have city electric, but
yes,
just know that we're still lower than RMC. So.
Yeah, and it's a very, I'll say in a lot of the electric utilities where we work with, it is a common trend of those municipally owned have been quite a bit less than maybe a for-profit situation there, just because you guys have managed a lot of those rate impacts and your everything is put towards the constituents and making sure that those are managing factors, not for-profit. So certainly helps with that average monthly bill, but certainly something to take into account. So with that, I know I've spoke a lot here. I feel like I'm winded after talking, but certainly can go into any sort of questions you may have, or we can dive into any further parts of the report. I know there's 36 more pages, but that's the summary of kind of everything coming together in our findings and kind of working towards that three-phase increase.
I think a couple of things I'll also point out. You know, obviously, as Ian said, there is a fair amount of communities that are looking at and adjusting their rates, that these charts aren't necessarily completely up to date on that because it is a moving target all the time. But I think the other interesting thing is when you look at especially that top chart, you can see where there are some communities that have an investor-owned utility or a private utility for their water. There are some that have a private utility for their sewer, although that's not as prevalent. But the interesting thing is when you look at that chart, you can really specifically see how many of the communities have been impacted by a long-term control plan on the sewer side. And something we've talked about for as long as I've been here and even before me is the fact that our community was extraordinarily hit with long-term control plan costs that other communities didn't have because we didn't have a whole lot of storm and sewer separation. And so over time, we have done some of that separation. Some of that we have sent a lot to the plant to be treated there. That was a decision before my time and before any of your time. A decision to send, instead of doing a large separation project, send a lot of that sewage to the plant to be treated there. And while we have done some separation in different places, and even the downtown plan talks about separation in downtown, which will divert a lot of stormwater from our sewer or wastewater utility to the river, which is the appropriate place for it to go, you can still see when you look at those communities the impact of a long-term control plan, which we already had. And so those are charges, those are bonds that we're carrying for 30 years, I think. And so we're paying for them for 30 years. But it also was, you know, a $10 million hit, an $8 million hit. It was those big charges, if you will. So that's another thing I'll point out for those charges. But I will tell you, as I talked about this on my lunch with the mayor last Friday, but this plan, originally we cut a fair amount of stuff out of the plan after having consultation with our department heads just to make sure that the things that we're going to cut to keep that number down were things that weren't absolutely critical. We have kept everything critical in there. We also have a fair amount of dollars, I'm going to call it anticipatory dollars, if you will, for a downtown plan. We don't have the preliminary engineering back for that yet, so we don't exactly know what that cost is going to be. So we took estimates based on what we know of materials and projects now and kind of estimated that into that. So
those are figured into that.
Those are figured into that. The downtown plan is figured into the project, into this three-year plan, there's many other things, again, as noted, from capital investment standpoint for water and wastewater and certainly stormwater. Electric is a really more of a, it's actually below COLA. It's actually below the cost of living adjustment, if you will, but there is a, I think 1% is what we put
that's
in
correct.
Just to kind of try to keep up with cost increases. So that's generally, I guess those are my comments to start. I certainly can answer more questions, but if you have questions, Ian, this is a good time to ask those.
Now, is this kind of been passed on our advisory board?
They'll be up to speak next. Yes.
And Mayor, I think it's a great point. Electric is at 1%, so below cost of living, and you'll continue to do those. The tracking factor is rolled in, but continue to work with Crone on that tracking factor moving forward to accommodate for those wholesale purchase power costs as well. So certainly electric is in a very good standpoint in those, and then getting some of those other utilities that make up maybe a higher percentage of that rate increase more in line with meeting those reserve requirements that are set forth through the bond covenants.
Well, thank you for putting this together the way you have. It's, for me, it's very easy to interpret, and it's very easy to understand the reasoning and why we're looking at what we're doing. I really respect the approach that you have for this.
Appreciate that.
It's nice to see how we stack up against other communities, too, because there tends to be online a lot of complaining about the amounts that people pay, but it's, you've never lived anywhere else, you don't really have an idea what that is, so it's helpful to see it in this time.
Well, I think if you, not to kind of belabor that point, but I think if you go to, it may be different because I have the typed out here, so if you go to page 9 of your report, which is page 30 in your packet, you can see kind of where we stack out from a stormwater perspective. This is, again, one of those things where we're under a federal mandate of MS4 community. But MS4 community, we're in one of those counties that were mandated to have stormwater projects and to have stormwater mandates, if you will. And so that's why when John Ghost comes and presents every year, that's a part of the federal mandate. So you can see where we are compared to others in the stormwater. Comparatively there on page 9 of the report, if you look on page 25 of the report, you'll see where we're at regarding sewer, and you'll see, again, that impact of the long-term control plan and where we're at from, again, what I asked Baker Tilly to do is to get some of our neighboring communities as well as similar-sized communities. So that's why you see the choices that are in there. So that's page 25 for sewer. And then if you look at page 34, you'll see our water, our drinking water, if you will, and see where that is comparatively. So it's kind of a mixed bag, right? Electric is below state average. Water is below state average. Sewer is above state average. Stormwater is above state average. So it just, it's a little bit of a mixed bag in regards to that. But I do think it's good to see where we're at compared to others. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So nobody wants to raise rates.
No.
But
everybody wants to do that.
But this is the second time we've done this, like, small incremental, right? At least in the 10 years.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point that I forgot to mention is that, again, 3 or 4 years ago now, there was a conscious choice by the council to say, instead of waiting for the last minute and jumping our sewer rate by $10, $15, and then the next year jumping our electric rate by $10, and the next year, instead of doing that, it makes it a lot easier to do little increments along the way. Now, as mentioned in my Lunch with the Mayor program, people are going to be hit differently, right? We have to try to find an average user and what that looks like, which has all of our utilities, including electric. But in about a third of our community doesn't have our electric. And there's members of our community that have water but no sewer, and some in our community that have sewer but no water. And so everybody, all residents have stormwater. But I just say that to say we try our best, and I think Baker Tilly does, to show what a average citizen or average customer is going to look like, but every bill is going to be different based on what utilities you have and how much usage you have. So you use more water, you're going to have a higher water sewer bill. You use less electric, you're going to have a lesser electric bill. So again, you guys know that, but for the public who may be watching, I think it's important to know that. But yes, it was a very conscious choice to do minor increments every year, even though it may be slightly harder politically. It makes it easier on the citizens so that they don't have to expect this kind of thing, right? It's a the gradual thing.
Well, my cook, how much did you just spend for the all the work you just did over
the dice?
I knew somebody's going to ask me that. I didn't figure it all up. Probably a neighborhood of $2 million.
$2 million, right?
Yeah.
And so I think people that are watching or listening or seeing this later have to take in consideration that even though this is going to be bumped up to a very small gradual increment, when we have a $2 million project.
And I will say that that's $2 million we paid for all that in-house too. We did not have to go out for outside money.
We didn't bond.
And
we
so
didn't
that covers that.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of like putting money in the bank for like a rainy day fund is essentially what we're doing.
And something else I've noticed in the past 10 years too is the cost of really everything just keeps going up. Especially I've noticed in electric department.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And all the different infrastructure that we need to be able to do that. So
I think that's a really good point. I'm going to put you on the spot, Sean, but I know from a truck perspective, from a transformer perspective, can you just highlight a couple? I know I'm putting you on the spot, even the electric poles, can you just highlight a couple of those price increases you've seen over the last couple of years?
So for instance, we just took delivery of a budget truck that we ordered back in 2024 just this week, and it was $260,000-ish. That same truck is $345,000 if I were to order it
today.
The truck we just ordered a month ago was set the record for UTE, who we ordered from, for $468,000. He bid one the very next week for $515,000. So transformers are up almost 100% from 5 years ago. Poles are up 75% from a decade of pulling. NIPSCO Electric proposed a 25% increase to their rates.
Mm-hmm.
And the IURSD cut it back to 17%. Duke Energy was slowly down its 30% increase in rates. It's going to get worse probably before it gets better. But we're learning to operate in this space and to do a better job, capital improvement, forecasting, and get that into the rates as you can.
Yeah. I'm going to put Mike and Kelly to a certain extent on the same spot. Yeah. Can you talk about a couple of your price increases you're seeing in your different departments and how that obviously impacts the rates?
Oh, on ours, I would like to use one of our headless pumps when we first purchased them. They were $75,000. The last I priced one out, they were between $150,000 and $125,000. And that's just for one, and we have three of them that rotate every 24 hours. So, yeah, they jump from 74 to 115,000. $6,000 pump is now almost probably close to 8, 9, 10,000. So, yeah, dramatic increases on a lot of things. Chemicals are up in price. Everything.
Kelly, Mike?
Different things. I mean, some like concrete, it builds up every year. I think it jumped 15 bucks a yard this year again. It always goes up, it seems like 10 bucks a yard every year. Equipment like trucks, I know some of the vendors are telling us, because of these, it was a tier 3 last year, now it's going to be a tier 4 engine, and that drives the price up, and it seems like that stuff's constantly happening. And then like our jet machine that we got 20 years ago was $210,000, and that same machine is like $400,000 now, or $500,000.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mike?
Well, you don't see our infrastructure, and our infrastructure in some parts of this town is over 100 years old. It's getting bad. It's going to have to be replaced. We also, with our growth, you know, we supply water to all city residents, not just like electric does some, mm-hmm. but not all of them, but we supply water to all of them, which means we've got growth areas of growth coming up that we're going to have to put down a new well, and we're talking a couple hundred thousand to develop the well fill and that, and we don't even know really where we're going to put. Is it going to take, if we don't put it over there where we can get to our plant, then we're going to have to build another plant to handle that wherever that well filled is. So there's a lot going on. I mean, the water department has left stuff, and I've had the money in past years that we've had to leave stuff go, and it's going to start hitting us all at once. And it's not something that we can sit there and say, well, we can't fix it. We have to fix it.
Well, the filters that we just did, I mean, we had to change all the filter media, and that was, I mean.
Yeah, it was like $60,000.
I mean,
besides that, you know, if we're only allowed to pump through them filters 3 million gallons a day. We're getting up there in the summertime when we're getting close. We're going to have to add another filter. We're going to, you know, there's a lot of stuff where we're going to have to upgrade.
So I think that's the bad. I mean, that just shows you a little taste of what we've had, and I know it's I truly say this with all due respect, but there is a lot of comments and thoughts out there by the public that this is just a padding wall list or it's things like that, but it's not. We are investing those dollars in our infrastructure each and every day. When you see a water truck or a sewer truck or an electric truck going down the road, typically they're going to fix something or to build something or to improve something, and again, the cost overall, as Jennifer mentioned, it just skyrocketed on all kinds of different materials, and so we're trying to, again,
you can afford not to do these things.
That's the other thing is, right, at the end of the day, we know of many other communities who, for the sake of political expediency, and I say that with all due respect, but for political expediency, we don't make the hard decisions because it's easier to look at residents and say, well, we kept your rates down. That's really easy to do. But when their water main breaks consistently or their manhole falls in or, you know, all those little things that happen along the way, poles fall down, things to that effect, we, number one, have the capital to be able to fix those things. But number two is that we're trying to be proactive about how we address those things rather than let them get to that state. So that's, again, I'll get off my soapbox, but I just, again, it's a 3.5% increase, which is, there's very few things in this world that are only going up by 3%. So, now, again, that doesn't make it easier on the pocketbook. I totally understand that. None of us want to do this. None of us want to raise any rates because it's more money out of our own pockets, too. But again, we also have a fiduciary and a fiduciary responsibility to our customers to keep those utilities in tip-top shape, if you will. So.
Well, I still think it goes back to crediting our department heads by being frugal with our money and looking at projects that have to be done versus the way you know, want to do, or you need to do it. And I think that goes back to the credit of our department heads and how responsible they truly are to keep the water going, to keep the lights on, to flush the toilet, to all that stuff, you know, that we sometimes take for granted. These guys take very serious. And so I give all of our department heads a lot of credit for how the rate increases are minimal compared to what they would have to be.
So the last of the 3 year was in 24, so there was not a rate increase in 25. But I've got to piggyback off of Dan for just a second. I don't think it's just our department heads being conscious of what they're spending, but them doing so many things in-house.
Yeah.
And working together. They may not look like they like each other sometimes, but they really do all get along well, and they work together to help each other, and I think that says a lot for the employees that we have, and not just the department heads, but everybody. We're all in this for the betterment of our community. So.
Any other questions for Ian? Poor guy, he sat up there for all this. All
no, I need. I sit at a desk all day, so I need this.
I don't know. The older I get, the younger I get.
Yeah, that's right.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Bora, you want to come on up?
Sure. Although you can pretty much set everything I had planned.
So you want to introduce yourself? Obviously. Laura represents the Utility Rate Advisory Board, but go ahead.
I was going to say
I'm
that.
Sorry.
You can still do it.
Yes.
Okay. I'm Laura Richcreek, and I represent the southwest section of the city. I've been in Whitley County since 2000 or so, and then I lived in town since 2010. I do want to note that I'm taking Lee Bass's position, and so I want to make a general thank you to him for his service and wishing him the best. So the Utility Rate Advisory Board meets about once a year to review the information Baker Tilly has prepared and then bumps the needs of the city and the mandates of the state against the budget and trying to understand the rate increase suggested by the experts and then carefully consider if the rate increase should be implemented, if so, at that amount. We had this discussion, and if so, then are there easier ways than others to introduce it to the residents' household budgets? Because we live here, as you said, we're considering our own household budgets. This affects those of us on the board the same way it's going to affect every resident out there. It's good to hear the different perspectives of what this equipment costs and how it, you know, the prices can go up. I had no idea. So the board met on December 3rd, and we reviewed this. We heard from the mayor what the department heads have done to trim their budgets and coordinating efforts to keep expenses low. We appreciate those efforts by community members for the sake of everybody. So essentially, I hope I've got this right, the funds are needed for state-mandated updates or changes, capital improvements, repairs, and then financial reserves that fund those repairs. Okay, so we lost one funding source with the grant for Westgate, a project that we can't leave partially done, and prices on materials and labor have increased. And so as a community, we need to pull together when these anticipated resources fall through. Projects still need to be done for the good of the community. So, as community representatives on the Utility Rate Advisory Board, we recommend the proposed increase of $10 per month per year for the next 3 years. And this last little bit is for me, so I feel like I've said it clearly. That's an increase to each resident's utility bill of $10 a month in 2026, $10 a month again in 2027, and $10 a month again in 2028, at which time then we'll revisit all this again. So, any questions?
Questions more. So, as a reminder.
And that's on average.
So, as a reminder, Utility Rate Advisory Board was in our stat, it was in our ordinances prior to me coming on, but when our city decided to leave the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission on water and electric, because that's all we were under at that point, we effectively revived the Utility Rate Advisory Board. It's made up of 5 members. 4 of them are from the 4 different council districts in the city. The 5th one is a non-city utility customer, so someone who lives in the county that is a utility customer of ours. Laura got the honor to become the chairperson of the Utility Rate Advisory Board this year with Lee stepping off the board. I also want to point out, she doesn't like it, but Karen Rust in the back is also a member of the Utility Rate Advisory Board as well. So, any questions you have, Laura? You have something?
No, I would just say after a clinical about it.
Okay.
I appreciate the work that you provide us from somebody outside of us looking in to bring your advice to the community as well as us.
Well, absolutely. We're relying on the experts. So, all right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Okay. So this is the point in time which we need direction, and that is whether you would like us to create the ordinance based on Baker Tilly and the Utility Rate Advisory Board's recommendations, if you'd like to do something different. So the floor is open for the council's wishes.
Well, I first thought it was going to be a lot higher. I was afraid when I heard about the, what was going to happen, just knowing, hearing from our department heads how the price increases were happening. So I'm very impressed with this amount. You know, $10 a month is still a lot for some people, but it, in the grand scheme of things, I would move that we go ahead and create the ordinance for this rate increase. That's just my opinion.
I second that.
Okay. Any other conversation? Okay, so I don't necessarily need a motion and second. I just need to know the will of the council so that we can create the ordinance. So generally speaking, I see yeses, nods. Okay, so we'll go ahead and create the ordinance. And will that be on next agenda? Okay, so that'll be on your next agenda. So thank you for your leadership in that. This is never a fun thing. This is one of the worst parts of being on council. One of the worst parts of being mayor that we got to do this, but the other side of that is I would rather us be making those decisions than somebody in Indianapolis, and that's what it almost used to be when we were under the IURC. It used to be we would try to overshoot the amount that we needed, knowing that they were going to lower it. So we'd play this game of like, well, we really need this, or we need this much, but we're going to actually ask for this much, so we get to that much. It was ridiculous.
Well,
and say what?
And we'll
oh yeah, and then we pay the reports and all that kind of stuff. So thank you, Baker Tilly. Appreciate that very much. We're getting close to being done. Can I talk to you after the meeting though, real
yeah.
quick? It's about something different. So
yeah.
Thanks. Appreciate you sticking around for a moment.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, we have some policy updates that are in front of you here. We have first up is the public safety personal days. I don't know, Gary, if you want to kind of take that on or.
Sure. So our personal days with us moving to 12-hour shifts, in there we had 32 hours, which doesn't equate to 4 personal days. So I know like most of the city workers other than the fire department are based on 32 hours. I think you guys are on 24 hours at 4 personal days. So I'm asking that and was able to get 4 personal days at 12 hours. So, ended up, I think they changed it instead of going by hours, they just did by days.
Based on their established work, because we have
right.
8-hour officers, we have 12-hour officers, we have 24-hour firefighters, so trying, and we got, well, I guess dispatch falls under the other manual, right?
Right.
So we're trying to figure out a way to word it so it's based on the position, not on an hour, a certain hour amount, so.
Based on the established work.
Yep. And then
there was another amendment in there, that which, again, I worked there 22 plus years. It was always, you know, that you earned them at the beginning of the year and you had to use them by the end of the year, but there was never really nothing in policy. So
yeah.
I think they wanted to update that. So you earn it on January 1st of each year and it has to be used by December 31st. Unused hours will not be paid.
So this is taking basically practice and ensuring that it's in the policy manual.
Correct. That's the only 2 changes to that.
Okay. Any questions?
Marcia has reviewed these, except for the overtime one, I believe.
Okay.
So, put that one.
Any questions regarding policy 5.9? Do I have a motion to approve policy 5.9 personal days for the public safety manual?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Brent, second by Jennifer. Further discussion? All those in favor show the usual sign. It is unanimous. Next up is the Immigration Reform Control Act. I believe that this is just incorporating what state law
yes.
mandates us to do, correct?
Yep. Same with the new hiring, the Indiana new hiring reporting.
Okay. So I'm going to take the both of the, yes, sir.
I'm about to make the motion.
Oh, okay. I'll take any questions on both of them, and I'll just do them both as a bulk if that's okay with everybody.
Sure.
Let's do. Okay, do I have a motion to approve policy 3.13 and policy 3.14?
Yes.
I'll second. Motion by Ryan, seconded by Brent. Further discussion? All those in favor show by the usual sign. It is unanimous. Thank you for that. Lastly, the overtime flex, we are going to table that. Leslie has asked for that to be tabled. There's still some things we need to, we want to work out through there. We thought we had it done, but it's not. So
okay.
We're going to table that till another meeting. I can't promise it'll be next one or not, but we're going to table it. That's okay. Okay, department head reports. Tom, you ready this time?
I am.
Okay.
For Baker Tilly, this will only take about 25 minutes.
They didn't want to get home anyway.
So. 101, as I reported about a month ago, broke a leaf spring, and one of the sections of the leaf spring is just missing. So we took it down to heavy truck. They're replacing the broken, the one that's missing the leaf spring and the other side. So that should be done tomorrow, they said. And then if you're heading down to Adam, the city mechanic, that has an oil leak and a coolant leak he's going to address. So hopefully in the next week we'll get 101, our newest engine, back. The new truck that was on order, we got kind of told that it could happen or could arrive anywhere from the first year to March. Now that's being held back to June, July, which none of us are really opposed to, because when it got thrown out that it could be here much earlier than expected, because it was the original expectation of getting it was at the end of this year, first of next. Well, we didn't have equipment for it, hose ordered, the whole kit and caboodle. So there was a little bit of a panic. Leslie was just going to pull money out of funds and just pay for it out of pocket if need be. That's tongue in cheek. It actually allows her to do a better job of seeking financing for that truck. So none of us are really opposed to pushing it back a little.
And to be clear, that doesn't change the price.
Just correct. Also, along with that, still looking at all of our options for 800 radios. The west side of the station, if you approach City Hall from the west, you may notice that we cut the bottom 3 feet of the metal off of the west side of the firehouse because of damage that had occurred over the last 20 years. We don't know how it happened. As a matter of fact, if you look at it, there's 2-foot electric poles along there. How somebody weaved in and did damage on the firehouse, nobody knows. But it could have been snow that got pushed up there because there's no other place for snow to push. But
it
really looked like
it.
Well, there's no other place, if it is. But it looked, to me, it looked like vehicle damage. And I don't know how anybody would weave in there and hit the building, but here we are. We are actively taking quotes for hose testing this year, so there's a whole lot going on. That's just the highlights.
Question, Tom? Thank you. If you ladies want to leave, you can. It's not a big deal. Don't feel obligated. You can stay.
No.
You can stay, but don't feel obligated.
Don't be rude.
Those two gotta stay. You guys don't have to stay. Thanks, ladies. Mike.
We're still waiting for the PLC to come in for the booster station so we get that back up and running correctly. Also, the storm drain on South Whitley Street has been completed. Now we just have to wait till the weather gets a little better so we can, level it out and seed and straw it. And then also we got some sidewalk we have to put back in there.
Okay. Question to Mike. Thank you. Kelly.
We pulled the leaf machines back out. We were able to take a couple days and go through town and picked up a couple loads, actually. We're going to be monitoring that. Since we have that snow in November, I'm sure there's probably going to be people trying to get it out in the spring. So we'll do the best we can going around and picking that up as we get close to the spring, too. Reached out to our people at Granger Leaves, and he's putting together a quote for us to probably sometime in March to get this ground up. And we're going to try to go around and get a round of limb pickup in. We had some structure damage in an alley to a manhole, so we had to fix that today. And we'll try to get around to get limbs when we can. With the winds and stuff, we had some things come down. So other than that, been trying to work with Q's and MTech on our camera truck to get some files, figured out where they were, and Ford's been working with them on that, and I think we're heading in the right direction.
Good.
So, yeah, should be good to come spring.
Question for Kelly. Thank you. Chip?
So I've been on vacation for a little bit. Mayor made me take one. It was not, I didn't want to, but he made me. Yeah.
It was a great vacation for him, too, then.
there was a vote taken. He didn't know the results. But.
We did the final interviews for the amphitheater for Eagle Park on the company that will be doing the building and financing of it. We had two incredible firms, and right now we're still debating it, so they were that close, so no real clear winner. Working with the mayor on a couple other projects, but other than that, just day-to-day stuff.
Questions, Chip? Thank you. Mike?
As I reported to the board earlier, our office road sustained some damage on the day before Thanksgiving, the big windstorm we had. So I met the insurance adjuster yesterday and got the report today. And our deductible is $10,000, and their estimate came in at just a little over $9,800. So they're not going to give us any money for our roof. We are going to move ahead with quotes, and instead of a shingle roof, try to move to a metal roof. Like I said to them, I've been here for 30 years, and part of the building, the old part of the building is on its third roof, and the newer part is on the second roof, which, you know, that's averaging every 10 years, and you shouldn't have to be putting a roof on every 10 years. So we've had some damage before, and it's just getting worse, so it's time to move on and get something new. We also met with Ferguson out of Fort Wayne today. We're replacing the decant valves on the flood storage tank. We started decanting off that earlier last month. Had one valve that doesn't close all the way now, and one that's just, you can't hardly get it open. So they're just, they're old. They were put in there 2007, 2008-ish, around that area. So, and they're outside, you know, 365 days a year. So they take a beating. We're waiting on a quote back from that, and started working on the annual SBI report. So, Marcia, if you get a phone call, it is in the works. But
haven't heard anything yet.
All right, we'll get that out to them. I can't promise it's going to be right at the end of the month, but I'm going to try my best, and then basically just working on year-end reports and files and everything like that. So that I have to do. So.
Question to Mike. I think it's important to know, just especially because we have new council members, is that when we built the new line for Steel Dynamics, that was a big deal for them. It's a big deal for our utility in a positive way, I think. But one of the parts of that deal was they SBI contributes every year additional amounts for the maintenance of that line, and so the report he's talking about is. Every year we give them a report of how we utilize those dollars that they give to us to help their line, if you will. So so that's when he talks about the SBI report, that's what he's talking about, just so you're aware. So.
That includes my staff going out and inspecting. There's 25. We've taken on 3-4 more inside the facility that I went bad. We've got one more to repair, so that will put us up to 28 ARVs that get inspected 4 times a year.
Air release valve.
Yes, air release valve, sorry. And then they do the structures, and if there's water in, they pump them out, they clean them out. The stations are inspected weekly. They have to be cleaned. The force main gets actually cleaned 4 times a year. We're responsible for that. So basically anything that we do to keep track of the hours, our expenses, as far as wages, you know, all the way down to the batteries that we put inside the transmitters as we send the pig through to clean. And that all gets reported at the end of the year to them, so they want to know where their money's being spent. I can show them where it's being spent.
Mm-hmm. Questions? Thank you, Mike. Sorry for that, but I think it's important for them to understand that.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Matt.
We're busy getting Carter Nicholson acclimated, getting his ideas and putting the baseball and softball schedule together to get that out for registration soon. We have sold out of father-daughter tickets on Saturday, and we have very few left for Friday. So we anticipate being sold out by the end of this week. So, and then that's what we're all busy on is getting decorations and getting the castles and, you know, anything else that we need to make for the dance together and put a plan together as to when it'll be taken down and when it'll be put up and all that.
Question to Matt. Thank you. GP.
All right. Officer Jansen, Officer Bidwell are in field training, doing well. Officer Jansen, he was at the jail. They're both green, but he's doing a little bit better than Bedwell, but not much. So they're both doing very good. So happy with their progress. Officer Garman, Officer Blocker, and Officer Diddy are in their second week at the academy. And they're also doing well down there. They haven't came home or quit yet, so that's a good thing. Tornado sirens have been repaired. Again, I think I might have mentioned this in the last meeting. Thanks to Sean and his crew to get out there and put the new boxes and replace the batteries. The deployed drive is working great. However, the one at the FOP has a fried motherboard. I'll get it out there. A motherboard, which we have ordered, and it should be here soon. So it's I don't know if something struck that at one time, but when they did open it, they did see that it was like burn up, and but they thought maybe the board would still work, but just replacing the batteries and stuff, but it didn't. Both police and dispatch have lots of great trainings coming up in 2026, so a lot of people looking forward to that. Holidays were safe, very little issues around the holidays. We did have some extra patrols around the city, so I think that helped. And then we do have a community event, build Legos with our local police. So I don't know if you guys got this up there. I don't know if Dan might be forwarding it down there. We've got this little thing here. We're going to be building Lego police trucks. We'll be putting a sign up for that. Eagle Glen has graciously donated their space for us to have it out there. So right now we got 25 of these. So we'll see what the sign up shows up. And if there's more, then we'll get more. Hope that's a good event for kids. We'll have a screen up there. We'll build it piece by piece. So that's on February 22nd between 2 and 4. But I'll get something put out here shortly with that.
Okay. Questions up here? Thank you. Sean.
We start a new intern on Monday. Brett Severs. Fever team has been very prevalent in the city for a long time. We have another one on staff. He's a senior at Cherubusco High School. We'll not get him too much, but he started on Monday. His father is used to be a lineman. Now he's kind of in charge of all the linemen and supervisors at Northeastern RMC. So he has a history. He knows a little bit of the trade. So looking forward to having him this semester. Continued our pole changes. We're currently working on Brown Road by Noble County to get those poles changed. I'm working on a job description we did a few years ago. I'm going to talk with Marsha about how we get it into the salary ordinance at this point. But, then I'm going to have a job posting hopefully very, very soon. We're still short one person. And then the board works to approve my no substation testing for the year. We test those every 5 years. We have 3 active substations. This will be 2 of them, what we've had done in the last 2 years. And there will be another couple of years from now. So we won't need to do this again for a few years.
Okay. Question of Sean. Delaney.
My name is Delaney D. I am a sophomore and I'm part of the youth council. Last meeting we went to Mary Rayburn Elementary School and we were able to help with the Christmas party. We were able to play games with them and have a few different stations like a craft. And we were just able to give them like a fun time before Christmas break. And then we were able to take a tour of the courthouse, which is here in town, and it was very nice to be able to see like all of the judges and the courtrooms, and we were able to meet like some of the people who worked there and like did polls for the like elections, and we were able to see the room where they kept all the records, and we were able to talk about how different it was moving from written records to technology and just how that worked. And we were able to just learn a bunch of stuff about the courthouse, and it was just a very nice experience.
Question to Delaney? Thank you. Marcia?
Nothing.
Leslie?
Nothing.
A couple of things for your information. We had a great conversation today about kind of future with Westgate. There is a bill going through the legislature right now that could free up an additional $75 million to go toward an additional round this year before the regular round of community crossings. So we met today to kind of plan for that. If there is we're going to call it a March-April round, we'll be applying for Westgate for that purpose. Into that round, excuse me. And then if for some reason we wouldn't get funded for that, we'll go right into the July call, which is the normal call. One way or another, we're going to get Westgate done because we have a commitment to them. We've done two of the three phases. We just need to finish the third phase. So we made sure that kind of any intel we had from other communities as to why they were or weren't funded, which most of them were really ticky-tack issues. They were just trying to find ways to pluck applications out. That we make sure that we get those T's crossed and I's dotted. So that's that. We are having a conversation tomorrow between me and Lori Shipman, our grant writer, as well as Okra, to figure out what downtown revitalization grant looks like and how we may be able to finagle that with community crossing dollars in the future and all that kind of stuff. So trying to get that all lined up. We do have the city blood draw on Thursday, so all of our employees that are part of the wellness program will be doing that. And then as a reminder, I'm gone all next week. I'm out of town. Go Hoosiers. Then when we get back, I'll be spending the first day with Youth Council, the next 2 days in Indianapolis. I will be back for Council on Board. And then we'll be at City Retreat. So have a really busy week, the week of the 26th there. Really looking forward to City Retreat. I got almost everything ready to go. So I'm hoping by the end of this week, we'll have everything in the Dropbox ready for scheduling and all that kind of stuff. We will be up in South Bend. So with that, I think that's all I have right now. Okay, thank you. Tad.
Redevelopment today. Have a lot of things that we're working on. Most importantly is the jail project. It's something we're going to kind of regroup. Cancel the RFP that we have, work with another organization that'll cast a wider net so we can have a higher likelihood of getting other investors, developers involved with that project. So we'll reissue one, another RFP.
I appreciate you bringing that up. I forgot. I need to notify the council that the Board of Works did transfer the deeds, if you will, quit claim deed over to the Redevelopment Commission because they have a lot more flexibility in that negotiating for those requests for proposals. They were already kind of leading that process anyways, but we transferred the property, we will be transferring the property over to them because it makes more sense for them to run and manage and take care of that because we have more restrictions than they do. So thanks for that, Ted. Brent?
Nothing.
Ryan?
No, sir.
Okay. We have no press. We have a great audience that probably doesn't want to say anything else. So we will call the meeting adjourned. Thank you.